You are tuned into Business Sense on Adventist World Radio, powered by SID Media.
Now, of course, this being Women's Month, we are so happy that our shapeshifter today is Dr. Sibongile Vilakazi, the president of the Black Management Forum, who joined the organization in 2009 and previously served as its Gauteng chairperson and also chaired the Social and Ethics Committee on the organization's board, where she developed a reputation of zero tolerance for unethical behavior. And she's joining us on the line. Good evening, ma'am.
Good evening. How are you? And thank you for having me.
I'm doing well. Thank you for asking. It's such a pleasure to have you this evening. How was your day?
Oh, tired.
I'm sure.
It hasn't ended yet.
I work dinner. Oh, my
but
goodness.
I had to just step out and take this call.
Ah, sure. Are you going to get home anytime soon?
Yeah, well, I guess I will. Just not now. But I will.
Just not now, eh? No, we really appreciate your time. I can promise you that we won't keep you as long as we should. Thank you so much for joining us. We've got this segment, which is called Shapeshifter. And this is where we interview people like yourselves every single Thursday, you know, to give us insights of who you are. How did you even get to where you are? I'm sure there are young people that look up to you, and some might not get the opportunity to even ask you how you made it to be where you are. And this is what this segment is about. It's about encouraging young people that it is possible. So before we even go any far, I was asking Umonde Lot, and Umonde said I must send his greetings as well to you. he comes in every Thursday. He's our thought leader. So we've got this segment called Thought Leader as well, where he gives us insights around African countries as well. So which is a really interesting segment that's also growing. So he said I must send his shout outs. I'm sure he's listening right now as we speak. So yes, you see, Monday, I've done what you asked me to do. So there you go.
Oh, Steven, that's so nice, Monday. Thank you.
Indeed. Your thoughts, ma'am, on BRICS?
Oh, BRICS. I'm a bit upset that we couldn't get in. I mean, the whole organization is BMF. We couldn't get accredited.
Oh, my goodness.
So I'm a bit upset by that, but we should have been there, but we're not, but it's fine. I think it's a great opportunity for the country to be on the spotlight. It's also good feedback, you know, to be hearing global leaders and how they feel about, you know, the country. It makes you realize that most of the time we complain endlessly about the challenges that we face, rightly so, but we miss the point that the world is bigger. And in the bigger scheme of things, we actually envy.
Yeah.
You know, the world envies us. So it's always great to get that kind of feedback. And I think BRICS has done that for us, which has really put us on a global stage.
Oh, that's fantastic. And any thoughts from BMF with regards to the expansion now, including 6 more countries?
The question is, what will you call it now?
BRICS Plus.
So they need to start thinking about the name.
Yes.
But it's basically a sign, though, that the status quo can no longer remain. From a BMF perspective, that's a positive development, because that's what we've been fighting for, that the status quo has to change. So the world as we know it, we won't be the way we've always known it.
Yeah.
And it's encouraging, because it says that even the fight that we are fighting of transformation in the country, corporate South Africa at some point will have no choice but to look like the majority of the population of the country.
Exactly.
So it's really encouraging.
Oh, that's lovely. That's lovely. No, thank you so much. Let's go back now. Can you take us a little bit back? And I know this question might sound a little bit strange, but and maybe because, you know, when you get into certain places and events, you don't necessarily get asked, who are you? People know you. But from your own perspective, who is Dr. Sibongile Vilakazi?
Who am I? I think the easiest place to start is by the descriptions that society gives us. I'm an aunt. So that's where it's, and those are the roles really that ground me.
Yeah.
I must say it's one of my happiest moments even I'm taking out the kids for educational stuff, like having fun, you know, and helping them to see the world differently. I really love that role. So that's a big part of who I am. But then secondly, I think I'm a community builder.
Okay.
I think naturally.
Yeah.
I want to see people develop. I want to see growth. Specifically black people. I don't know. There's this thing in my heart for people that we deserve better. And someone has to help shape us getting to that better that we deserve.
Yeah.
And I feel strongly that that's a big part of my identity. That I'm that person who must shape things and help us to get us to where we deserve to be.
Lovely. Hence we are a shapeshifter of our segment today. So that fits in quite perfectly. Let's go back. Where were you born? And what were some of the challenges at the time?
So I come from Pietersdorp, which is a small town just between Swaziland and KZN.
Yeah.
So it's right there in the middle. So very small town. So when I grew up there, very little happened.
Yeah.
There was not much happening. I always felt like an outsider. I never felt like I belonged.
Okay.
Spent a lot of time in the library or at home.
Oh.
Yeah. I was one of those people, I think, as a growing up, that we always looked at as
Gangutuban.
Yes. You know, who do you think you are?
Yeah.
You treat yourself differently. It's simply because I just never really belonged. I only had, I think, at most two friends or three friends. And I'm happy to say those friends are still my friends to this day.
Nice.
And because they were genuine friendships that were formed. That's where I come from. Pietersdorp, my dream was to leave Pietersdorp. If you feel like an outsider, then you feel like you don't belong. I wanted to leave Pietersdorp, and I always knew that I was bigger than me. I think the place was too small for me, and the lifestyle at the time, it wasn't something that I it was just not right. Like the social alcohol abuse, you know, all of those things that in that typical small town it would have been. So success basically was about something you could attain outside. You had to leave.
Sure. That sounds like, I love the part where you said, you know, you always felt like you were bigger. And there's a comment that says where we deserve to be, I suppose, alluding to your community building and shape shifting work, you know, getting us black people to actually realize there is where we deserve to be. So that's really amazing. Apartheid, let's go back to that. How did it affect you, especially at Pietersdorp?
Not much, because you are isolated. So you're in the town. When you see white people, you see them when you go to town. So I really didn't. And I was born, I think, at the time where I wouldn't have seen it that much. You know, the brutality that we read about, and all of those things. Like, I was too young to see that. But what I saw was the move from apartheid to democracy, you know, just before that, before 1990 or just after 1990, between 1990, between 1990 and 1994, that violence that we experienced as a country, I think that's the part of apartheid that I really saw and even left a I don't know, shaped some of how the people that we became. But in terms of seeing the brutality of it, no, not really. But obviously, because you live in the township, you live in abject poverty, those are the consequences of apartheid for a black child. And then the aspiration that you must leave for you to have a better life. And I remember Nelson Mandela coming to campaign in our township. And one of the things that he said was, you know, he was trying to paint this better life that we were about to embark on, or that education will be free, and black people can move around and go to live in suburbs. A black child can go to a white school and education will be free. You know, I hung on to those words that I am definitely leaving this place and I'm going to a white school and it will be free. I remember getting home after that rally and excited, and I told my mom, I'm going to a white school. Education is free. And my mom looked at me, you know, like, really?
Yeah.
Well, it didn't happen immediately, but it didn't happen eventually.
Yeah. Oh, lovely. And then the issue of poverty then, you know, you find that it's often very easy when you look at such things, especially if you are born in such an environment, it can easily, you know, swallow you in, and you almost, your perspective of life and what can be achieved is, you know, within the parameters of poverty and all that. How has that shaped the person that you eventually are today? Or if you look back, you're like, that has almost fueled you to want to be better.
No, I was lucky because I'm a last born in a family of, and there's quite a gap between me and my siblings.
Okay.
So I think I was cushioned by that, because my brother got a job before everyone. My brother got a job very early after my dad had passed on, and then he just finished matric. His only option was to then assist the family, and he got a job and passed on. And I remember his first salary, like, bought us a KFC, the barrel. So, and I, immediately I became, I think, his project. Like, he was so determined to give me a better life.
Yeah.
That he cushioned me from a lot of things that poverty can shape a person to be. So my brother really cushioned me, because then, I mean, even in the township, when he started working, I was the always the best dressed one. So, you know, he just really made sure that I was taken care of.
Yeah.
And then when he could, then he took me to come and live with him in Secunda. And that's when I moved to a white school. So, like, basically, I was middle class. Yeah. So I didn't, I was cushioned. I think they saw poverty more than I did.
I see.
Then when he got a chance to turn things around for the family, I was the immediate beneficiary since I was young.
Oh, lovely. That's very interesting. That's very interesting. Let's go back to now your schooling years. What are some of the highlights that you remember?
Your schooling years. Then I was one of those top performing students.
Okay.
I think when I started being conscious of what I wanted to become, I wanted to be successful person.
Yeah.
So I was really doing very well. At school, I was top. And then I moved to a white school. Even me leaving, like, I was supposed to go there for an interview. So my brother just came randomly to get me. I was in class already. School had started. Then he just arrived, and then, like, I get called. Your mom is here to fetch you. I'm like, yo, what's going on?
Yeah.
Come outside, my mom and my brother, and they're telling me I'm going for an interview at Hasselbalch High School, which was one of the top schools in Mpumalanga. They were the highly performing school. So I'm going there for an interview. So I get there expecting an interview. Then they look at my marks and my academic record, and they're like, you know what? Come tomorrow. Your class is so you are in. So I didn't have to go for an interview. They just took me. And in those days, usually they would take you and you would have to go to a lower grade. The typical thing, you move from a township school to a white school, you will have to drop a grade. But I went right straight to the grade that I was in. Then now here I am. Well, now we have to immediately go run around, find uniform, stationery, all of those things. Then I get to class, it's full of white kids. The teacher is white, English is spoken, come from a small town where they teach you in Zulu. Everything was in Zulu. I was brilliant because I was learning in my own language. And now suddenly, here's a foreign language. I can't express myself. I can't even say anything in English. The trauma that I experienced because of that. And my marks just dropped.
Sure.
So I was failing everything, and except for math and accounting, which was strange.
Yeah.
Because everybody was struggling with math and accounting.
Yeah.
And here I was getting 80s, 90s for math and accounting and then failed everything else. It took a knock on my self-esteem, my identity, you know, because now I know myself as this boffin, and all of a sudden I'm failing and I don't know how to communicate, all of these things. So it was really terrible. But it also, I think it shaped the person that I am today.
Yeah.
The seed was planted then.
Yeah.
Because I had to literally pull myself out of almost failing metric. And the influence of my brother in ensuring that that does not happen. I wouldn't be here, like, really, without him. For my story, without mentioning my brother. He was so integral in the person that I became. But the experience of being an outsider in an environment, and then an experience of knowing who you, that you are, you can excel, you've got what it takes. But because the system is designed that you have to jump a hoop before, you have to learn first, for instance, in my case, before I could start performing the way I needed to perform. So that shaped my such deep sympathy and empathy towards an outsider. Like, whenever someone is not being covered by anybody on a system, I'm sensitive, highly sensitive towards that. And I have this deep need to bring them in.
Yeah.
And I guess that's why my space is this transformation and making sure that the economy is opened up for more people who look like me to participate in it and to thrive and shine and be the people that they were meant to be. So, and I think the seeds really was planted then.
Yeah. There's a comment that says, shout out to the big brothers who do what needs to be done for their younger siblings, especially at such a young age when most boys want to play and go wild. And then says, little did she know, I suppose referring to you, little did she know that her whole academic life prior was already the interview to get into that school. Yes. So there you go.
Wow.
So that's really interesting there. So indeed, shout out to your big brother. I mean, that's responsibility that I'm sure has paid off today, you know, looking back and saying, yeah, I contributed to that. Now, going to university, what did you study? And particularly, what drew you to what you studied?
So now I'm in matric and I'm about to fail. I'm not too sure what I want to study. But I've always been, like, for instance, biology, like, the subject that needed me to learn, I was drawn towards them. So I don't know where did I discover psychology, but the immediate thing that I wanted to do was nursing. Not because I love nursing, and I'm sure I wouldn't have studied it. Like, I wouldn't have known that.
Yeah.
But I wanted to do nursing because of financially. There was no money. Like, I didn't want to bother my brother any more than I bothered him. So I had this need that I needed to take care of myself. And nursing presented an opportunity where you could get a stipend while you are studying.
Yeah.
So it looked like an attractive field. So we went around with my... Well, firstly, I didn't apply because I wasn't sure I was even going to pass matric. So I didn't apply. And then... now, all of a sudden, I've done well. Like, I did very well. I surprised myself. And then, now I have to look for what now, you know, only after I've received my result, what now? So then, the next thing was, okay, try nursing. So we drove around looking for schools, nursing schools. They didn't take me. I applied, and none of them took me. There was rejection letter after rejection letter.
Sure.
So now, I was left with, okay, what now? So I'm here at home. The year has already started. I might as well do something to keep myself busy. So I decided then to enroll in a local school of marketing. And then I did the marketing course, a certificate in marketing. Little did I know that knowledge, I would use it. I mean, right now I use that knowledge. But at the time, it was just to pass time. Because I'm here, what now? So then I just decided to do that and then apply properly to university.
Yeah.
Then I guess that's when I got exposed then to, like, as I was reading psychology.
Yeah.
And I was clear that I want to do psychology. But in my mind, I thought counseling psychology or clinical psychology.
Yeah.
So I thought of psychology in the typical psychology way.
Yes.
So then I applied at the University of Pretoria and they took me. And
okay.
I applied once and they took me and I was like, okay, I'm not going to bother applying anywhere
yeah.
else. I was
yes.
applied at Pretoria University. And then I went in to do my psychology degree.
Yeah.
But obviously, because we go in with little information, then you discover once you are there.
Yes.
So when I was there, and then I discovered that you need to go up to master's level.
Master's,
really,
yeah.
Psychology.
Yeah.
So you don't just, you know, and the process is just so stringent. Annually, only 10 students
sure.
get selected.
Sure.
So it's really competitive. Like, so you have to immediately, as you discover that this is the route you want to take, be serious. Take everything serious.
Mm.
So yeah. So then I was there doing psychology undergrad, and then I decided to volunteer. There was an AIDS center at the university. So I decided to volunteer at the AIDS center. So we went through HIV education, and then we have to go to hospitals and foster at home, take care of people, educate, all of those things. And that's when I discovered that, you know what, psychology in the traditional sense was not for me. I couldn't be a psychologist. Like the people's problems, they weigh on me.
Yeah.
I want to solve them and I can't.
Yeah.
And that's not kind of person that. Then I discovered there's actually another path. There's research psychology. And research psychology is all about developmental. You either develop psychometric test, or you can go into business and understand human behavior and how to sell. And that's when the marketing started coming in handy. Then I did research psychology. Then that's when I ended up now where I ended up in business.
Yeah. did you ever think that it will get you to where you are today?
I think because education was such a clear path for success.
Yeah.
I did know that once, if only I could just get to university, my life would change. So I knew it will take me somewhere far, but I didn't know, obviously, how the path would be shaped. And the path was just shaped in its own way. And voila.
And what kept you motivated then? Because it sounds like it was not money, because you were volunteering at some stage. So clearly money was not what was motivating you.
I wanted to be successful. I never wanted to go back to PTG. For me, that was like always the motivation. I couldn't, like, for instance, have only a junior degree and not have master's degree and be a psychologist.
Yeah.
I wanted to leave PTG and I wanted to be somebody. So I had to be called something. So I had to be a psychologist at the end of my schooling career.
Yeah.
But also I've always been self-reliant.
Yeah.
So I used to work at university. Throughout my university career, I was working like odd jobs, student jobs. At master's level, I became a mentor at the High Performance Center. It's a center for, it's a sports center for high performing athletes.
Yeah.
And I was there, like, it was great because I stayed there for free, so I didn't have to pay for accommodation.
Yeah.
And also I was in touch with high performers.
Yeah.
Like our best sports kids.
Yeah.
And they identify them, they come and they groom them there, they train, and you watch how they train, how hard they train. And I think that also really helped me to keep me motivated in my studies, because I used to watch these kids and like for instance, the swimmers, 5 o'clock in the morning, they are already in the pool swimming. At 6 o'clock, they must be in their room bathing. And at 7 o'clock, the clock, everything is done on time.
Yeah.
They must be at the breakfast, and they must be done getting into the bus, going to school.
Yeah.
So I used to watch that and I asked myself, but what would give me reasons for me not to push myself? I mean, if you see these young girls pushing themselves like this, why would I not push myself? And as a result, I was the first person to complete my master's, my thesis, everything. In my class, I was the first one to finish it because of that. Because I was just motivated by being with high performers and see what it is. if you're a high performer.
Yeah. I know you've done Nedbank, you've done Alexander Forbes, you've also done being a deputy director for MBA at Wits Business School. And I know you also had the chairperson of the board of the Gauteng Growth and Development Agents, particularly also with the Black Management Forum. Let's speak about that in a nutshell. Seems like it was a crisscrossing, but do you see any common thread maybe across all of them? Because I see as a person who was always looking to transform and change people's lives, and I think all these organizations kind of gave you the same thing.
Yeah, no, definitely. But in my career earlier on, I was more interested in learning. So
yeah.
I was really consciously developing my skills.
Yeah.
So I never really cared about the salary.
Yeah.
I went into spaces that were giving me a skill.
Yeah.
I just had a need to be skilled and knowledgeable. I just didn't see how it would all come together so nicely. It only happened later when I realized, oh my God, I was crisscrossing because of, you know, it was all building up to become this skilled person and I can run a board seamlessly because I understand every part of a business, for instance, how it runs. So I'm quite grateful that I did that. But the common theme was always my need to get people to have a voice. When I was in market research, I was drawn towards a project that needed me to be the spokesperson for a market that nobody took serious. The lower market was always there, the one giving clear insight that business clients will be like, yo, I wouldn't have seen it like that. And then they would turn it into whatever product that they were selling and all of that. But it was very important to me that people are represented correctly and their voices are heard properly. I've always been in this kind of environment.
And I suppose with the positions that you're holding, you get to do that. The dog trade, what made you want to do that? I mean, some people would say, unless you've got, something that you're hurting and you want to make sure you deal with your head, that's why people pursue dog trades. Because it's a lot of work, but I'm sure you're hurt. That's what most people would say. Maybe you're running away from that, you're hurt. Were you running away as well?
No, I needed to solve a problem. The problem of transformation.
Yeah.
So my thesis was on transformation. What makes one environment conducive and another environment also conducive for Black people?
Yeah.
And that's the hurt. Like when I see Black people suffering, it bothered me so badly that I had to write about it and spend 4 years writing about it, researching and writing, studying it. That's the reason I did it, because I needed an answer. And I had to find the answer, and I eventually found it.
How was that 4 years?
Grueling, and the thing is with a PhD, it's like running a marathon.
Yeah,
you don't have to do it. You do it because you want to prove a point to yourself. It really teaches you discipline, it also teaches you humility.
Yeah,
a big PhD is teaching you to really humble yourself, because one moment you think you're on top of the world, you've got the answer, and then you read one article that just breaks everything you've just written or you thought. Someone else has already written about it and actually done it even better than you do. I have to go back to the drawing board.
Yeah.
So it humbles you. And the more you learn, the more you realize how much you actually don't know.
Yeah.
So you really learn humility. You really learn other voices, that other voices matter. And you must hear them. You must consider them. So, I really, I think that the person that I became, I'm proud of that.
Yeah.
And the process of getting to that person that you become. It's nice when you love both, when you love the process and you also love the title, because I wanted the title. So there was no way I could drop out. A lot of people start PhDs.
Yes, and drop out.
And then they drop out.
Yeah.
They don't love the title enough to work for it.
Okay.
So I love the title.
Fantastic. Fantastic. I must be honest that, you know, you're one of the few people that I know who say they love their dog trade journey. I mean, a lot of people say, hey, that thing, like you said, you don't have to do it. Like, really, you don't, unless you're going to prove a certain point to yourself. So it's a grueling one. I'm just mindful of time, so I won't keep you too long. What is the one challenge that you look, when you look at your career, you can say this was a challenge, and how did you overcome that?
I think the biggest one for me would have been to fit in. I mean, all environments, they expect you to be part of the environment. That's why we've got culture, organizational culture, that you are fit.
Yeah.
I've always been a person who doesn't fit in. So, and that was a real challenge that I had to accept. And then decide, I'm going to do it my way. I'll start my own thing. That's why eventually I left corporate to be on my own. Because, so that was the biggest challenge for me, how to fit into space. Because I think my personality is so big that I don't mind going in, being the only one standing. Whereas most people want to, like, they would quiet their voices because I don't know how to quiet my voice.
Oh, wow.
My voice be heard.
Yeah.
And it's not always a good thing if you are in a space where there's people who are above you and you need to feel that they are above you.
Yeah.
So for me, that was my biggest challenge. Corporate was just, I had to accept it's not for me.
It's not for you.
Let me find a new path.
Yeah. Did you have an imposter syndrome at some stage? I'm sure being thrust into running a board and you're like, yo, where do I start? And there's always that temptation to always want to be an imposter.
No, actually, that was my most natural position.
Okay.
So
oh, wow.
Yeah, to Pakistan gave me that opportunity to chair a board, and a board of a big entity. It has 6 subsidiaries. And we must make sure that everything works in unison. So that's a huge responsibility. But it came so natural. It made sense why I couldn't belong. Like, I couldn't minimize myself.
Yeah.
I always felt like I need to. I'm bigger than the space that I'm in. I always had that sense. So getting a big responsibility just simply confirmed that. And it, like honestly, I think that's where I'm at my best.
Yeah. Oh wow.
Remember, I said I already, even in Positive, I knew I was bigger.
Yes. So, yes.
Yeah. So there's not, and I don't, and I didn't find myself feeling like, oh, do I deserve to be here or do I belong here?
Yeah.
It just felt natural that this is where you belong.
This is exactly where you belong. Okay. Let's wrap it up with talking about your relationship with money. How would you define your relationship with money?
My relationship with money has come a long way.
Yeah.
But I think where I am right now is the relationship of respect, deep respect for money. And understanding the freedom that it can give you and the passion that it gives you. So I'm never in a space where I don't want to have money.
Yeah.
I need that protection. And I went through at some point a phase where, you're young, you earn a lot of money and banks that find a way to sell you more credit.
Yes.
I found myself in such a bad space with money. I indebted, I was stressed out, and I had to find a way out of that. And when I found a way out of that, I think now I have deep respect. I respect money.
what was that way out? I mean, I'm asking because statistically, I mean, we are told that almost all South Africans, we are all battling with debt of some sort. And it's causing depression, it's causing anxieties, it's causing all sort of things. What is that one way that you walked out of that space?
I had to accept that I want peace. And the life that I'm living is not my life. I'm living a lifestyle that's not mine. I can't afford it.
Yeah.
I had to downgrade. So I had to accept and then downgrade. And it's a humbling process of accepting that, I need to get rid of this house because I'm paying more than I should and I don't need it.
Yeah.
I need a smaller space. I have to get rid of this house because I bought it for wrong reasons. Or I bought it thinking it was a good investment, but now it's taking away from me. And I must get rid of it. I mean, at some point, I was driving an SUV and I wanted to even downgrade that. Mm. I remember I went to the guy who sold me the car,
mm.
and I was telling him that I'm done. I need to downgrade my life. How can I get a new car, a smaller car?
Mm.
And he advised me against it. Like, no, you've already paid so much on this car.
Mm.
And if you get a smaller car, you'll most likely be paying the same amount of the same installment.
Yes.
And then you're losing the comfort that you are already used to.
Yes.
It's not worth it. Just stick it out until the end. And I'm glad I did that because I paid it off, that car. I still have it to this day.
Oh,
so
nice.
I'm glad that I listened to that advice. But the biggest thing is accept where you are.
Mm.
Don't force things. Don't be looking at what the Jones, what do they say? No one cares.
Yeah.
You will downgrade and then find your way back again.
Yeah.
So that's, for me, that's what happened.
Oh,
I downgraded and then I found my way back, but now understanding my limits. So I live within my limits now.
Live within your limits. Okay. What advice would you give your younger self? If you were to look back at your younger self, what would you say to Dr. Sibongile Sasemncane?
I would say relax.
Relax.
It will work out. Everything works out. Yeah, enjoy where you are. That moment is not going to come back again. Enjoy it.
Mm.
Don't worry too much about what you think is a problem at that time, because it's really minor.
Mm.
And it works out. Everything works out.
It always works out. Relax, right? So that's very important. And what would you do differently?
I doubt there's anything. I don't think there's anything I would do differently.
Oh,
because
everything
has gotten me to where I am.
Yeah.
And I'm sure even what's happening now will get me to the next phase.
Mm.
So when you are in that space where you are, the challenges can sometimes they seem overwhelming. And you're like, how do I come to this? But knowing that I've come out of so many other things, and now I just know that, I'm learning, I'm growing. So a new space, it must challenge me. So the challenge simply means you are growing. But it's not going to overwhelm me. So I don't regret anything. I really don't regret anything.
Oh, wow. That's encouraging. That's really encouraging. 10 years from now, where are we going?
I'll be running the country.
Oh, look at that. Oh, wow. Okay. That's interesting. Sure, that's really interesting. We'll be running the country 10 years from now. Look, we're going to call you back 10 years from now and say, hey, please don't forget us. We are still here, Mrs. President. You know, I suppose the biggest interview we'll ever do, bring the president of the country to that forum. So that will be really amazing. Any last words, especially to young people that look up to you, what would you say?
Maybe just say thank you for this opportunity.
Thank you, ma'am.
I remember how listening to people who had made it, or who looked like they had made it, because no one ever makes it. But it really gave me the strength that I needed to go through what I needed to do. Like Abu Kanyidlo, more for instance, at the time, where the women were looking up to, Abu Ipileng Kari. You know, there were those women that listen to their stories and you feel like, okay, do it. I can also, as a black girl, I can also get there. And now I'm in their circle. Just to encourage the young person who's out there that it's not impossible. It can be done. Whatever that they aspire to become, I'm happy that they can use me as that inspiration to see that it can be done. And honestly, it can be done.
Yeah.
You will find yourself where you have seen it, because once you've seen it, there is no way that you can't. The universe, your energy works towards achieving what you have seen in your mind. So see it in your mind, use some of us as for inspiration, and see who you are, and you will get there.
You will get there. Ma'am, thank you so much. And if you can Bluetooth some of that dinner this way, please do Bluetooth it this way. We'll join you over the line, right?
Well, thank you so much.
Thank you, ma'am, and have a good evening.
You too.
Thank you so much. That was Dr. Sibongile Vilakazi talking to us this evening about her journey. Isn't that just beautiful? I think that those words at the end, you know, I love that word to say, relax, it will be okay. Yes, work very hard, but relax. Kuzoba right. Kuzolunga. And I think, when one looks at one's life, you realize, hey, we need the Lord, and in some way to take courage from people like her who are saying, kuzolunga. I know some of us are closer to suicide. Some of us are closer to giving up. Some of us are closer to not believing anymore and all that. Kuzolunga. Kuzoba right.
You are tuned into Business Sense on Adventist World Radio, powered by SID Media.